Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. Jan Agafjortov will be joining us a little later on to defend Solskjaer's new deal. But we start off by welcoming Sid Lowe to the programme from a caravan somewhere in the east of England to talk about Rafael Varane. Sid, which we've talked a lot about on this show so far, but it's official now, isn't he? He waves goodbye to Madrid and joins Manchester United. I wanted to get your view from a Real Madrid perspective. Obviously, they've lost now their two first-choice centre-backs this summer, and that could be a bit of a problem, couldn't it?
It could be a problem, which is one of the reasons why I've been so struck by how little noise there is around this. You know, there hasn't been a terrible sense of loss. There hasn't been really a kind of a tearful farewell. There hasn't been a kind of a sense of seeing off a legend. There's been no huge, furious criticism about his departure. Now, I think obviously some of that is circumstantial. Some of that is about the awareness that the financial situation of Real Madrid isn't very good. The awareness that Varane wasn't going to renew. And so in that context, getting a deal of close to 50 million euros is pretty good. Of course, the arrival of Alaba helps as well. The fact that Militao played well at the back end of last season helps. And I think all of that helps to mitigate, if you like, a little bit the noise. But I'm still struck by it. I'm still struck by the fact that there hasn't been more made of this. Because as you say, this is Real Madrid's first choice centre-back partnership going back almost a decade. Now, not quite, of course, because Pepe was there for the start of Varane's period at the club. But basically, for the last 7 years, this has been Real Madrid's back two. And they've both gone.
But of course, I suppose from Real Madrid's perspective, as you mentioned, they're trying to cash in while they still can for someone like Varane. So we'll go to Alaba and Militao centre-back partnership. Unfortunately, Alaba's got COVID.
Yeah, although I suppose in truth that doesn't matter hugely, does it? And it's a little bit of a setback for his start, but this is something that will be a problem for 10 days or so, and then maybe a little bit of recovery times in terms of getting fully fit. But it's not enormously problematic for the season ahead.
Boys, you take a look at that starting 11.
Well, it's the midfield that gets concerning as well. Not because of quality, but because of
it's old
mileage,
yeah,
on legs. And how long can that keep going? We know Karim Benzema will probably continue in the manner in which he's been playing, which has been really well. But then you look at the Eden Hazard situation as well, and just what's the desire for him to try and somewhat replicate that form that made Real Madrid go out and spend that money for him? Because it seems to me from the outside, with fitness and other things going on, that there's a huge question mark whether he even wants to get back, yep, to being the guy that everybody looks to and says, wow, he can carry the can here. I don't think we're going to see that Eden Hazard again.
How highly do you rate Alaba, Stevie? And how big a task does he have on his hands now to come into this Real Madrid back four?
I don't think he's as good as Varane.
Really?
No. And so if you're getting rid of a player and bringing in a player who isn't as good, and it's only my opinion, then that's not a great thing, is it?
Sure.
So, you look at that team as well. I mean, there's a report today that Hazard has gone back to training and is overweight again.
Right.
I mean, so when you start looking at the team, yes, you're talking about the middle of the park needing regenerated. What's going on up front? Vinicius Junior isn't ready yet.
Right.
Unless Bale somehow magically, the real Bale appears.
Right.
Then you've got Hazard coming in again, overweight. Can't stay fit. Can't perform. So, you're kind of left with Benzema up front. So, your two centre-backs are gone, your midfield three needs regenerating, and you're pretty much relying on one guy up front because you don't know what else you're getting from the other two. That's not a good place to start the season.
If he's come back, and I haven't seen this, but if he has come back out of shape again, he needs a humongous kick up the backside.
Right.
I mean, seriously, that is just totally unprofessional now, if that's at least the second time it's happened, if that's the case. The David Alaba situation. David Alaba is effectively a fullback who has transformed himself into a player who can play centre-back and play in the middle of the park. Rafael Varane is a straight-up natural centre-back. Man United have got an absolute cracking deal here for that money. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
You know, when you see the price of some people floating around, to get somebody with his credentials for 40 million or thereabouts, fantastic business. But as you say, it doesn't leave Real Madrid squad in really good shape, but that's not for Man United to worry about. And, you know, how's he going to handle the Premier League? Don't make me laugh. We've seen some of the strikers out with the top teams in the Premier League. He'll have them in his pocket.
We'll talk about that a little later on with Jan and Manchester United's potential with Varane there. But just going back to the point that Stevie made in this article that apparently he read. So where did you read it, Steve?
I was listening to a football show on the radio this morning.
Right.
Somebody who generally is very reliable said it turned up. He'd turned up as overweight again.
And this is the stigma, of course, that, like it or not, Eden Hazard has stuck with him now, said he has that reputation.
Yeah, and I suppose go back to that starting 11 again. And of course, if you're very optimistic, you look at that starting 11 and think that's not a bad team. But as both Stevie and Craig are saying, you've got to look at the context of it. Now, it's not a bad team if all of those players are fully fit and at their best form. But you've got the doubt about the midfield, certainly over the course of a whole season. And I'm assuming that Fede Valverde will play a reasonably big role in there. If he stays, Martin Ødegaard will have to play a role. You've got two theoretically pretty good central defenders, but they've still got to form a partnership, which, of course, is what's been broken up after 7 years. And then, yes, let's come to Hazard or Bale or Rodrigo or Vinicius or Marco Asensio. There's lots of good attacking players there. But there has to be a question mark about whether or not we get that best form from them. You've got someone like Benzema who's got no real replacement. And then if you look at it purely in terms of Hazard, then yeah, you have to get a lot more from him than you've got the last two seasons. If he's not fully fit, he's obviously 2 years older. It's been a real disaster, his time at Real Madrid so far. Now, up to a point, the first season, it didn't matter because they won the league anyway. They had other players play well in his positions. But I think last year, that really showed. And I think Ancelotti has a big, big task trying to get him fit. Because if you do get fit, we all know he's talented. Mm. It's just about making the whole thing work and making him work to get into shape to start with.
And of course, what's apparent now, Carlo Ancelotti was not Real Madrid's first choice. Allegri saying this just yesterday. I have to thank Real Madrid and the president for the opportunity he gave me to coach the team. Then I thought about it and chose Juventus. It was a gesture of love for a club that gave me a lot and who I enjoy coaching. This isn't ideal either, is it, Sid?
Well, no, it's not. But I suppose if there is a manager anywhere in the world that you want at your club, who is publicly known not to be first choice, it's someone like Ancelotti. Because to be perfectly honest, Ancelotti doesn't care. So right. What? I'm at Real Madrid. He's not. That's fine. And Ancelotti sees this as a fantastic second opportunity that he never thought he would get. Please don't take this the wrong way, Napoli and Everton fans, but Ancelotti will see this as well as the chance to go kind of back up to a level that it looked like he'd left behind. And so in that sense, I think Ancelotti, better than some managers who would be more sensitive about this, doesn't mind that he's not first choice, so long as things go well and so long as he can get things into place. And of course, one of the reasons why I think there's been a certain tranquility at Real Madrid and a calmness surrounding a situation that's really not that great in some ways is that you've got a manager who's very accepting. You've got a manager who knows what's going on, who knows he's not going to get new signings, who knows that his job is to work with the people who are there, and also knows, yeah, they didn't bring him first. It was a chance conversation that led to Ancelotti becoming Real Madrid manager again, but it suited everyone. I suppose that's one of the things we sometimes forget, that when we talk about marriages of convenience, well, they're convenient. And this is a very convenient manager for Real Madrid at this particular moment.
Let's move away from Real Madrid for a moment, Sid, and focus on the possibility of Jules Koundé making that move from Sevilla to Chelsea. What are you hearing about this?
Well, this is, in truth, this is the deal. Not necessarily Chelsea. It really doesn't matter that it's Chelsea or not. It could have been United, it could be Liverpool, it could be whoever. This is the deal that Sevilla knew was coming, hoped would come. They turned down a big offer for Koundé last year, in part because they felt that they could wait a season in the hope that he would continue to perform and that his value would go up. And of course, Sevilla have made a virtue of sales. They're one of the few clubs that have totally taken the drama out of losing their best players because they have a system and a model that works, that not only works, but that demands that they sell their best players. And it's important for Koundé to go, and it would have been important anyway because it was their model, but off the back of the pandemic, it's even more important. And so this is something that Sevilla want to happen at the right price. It's something they're actively working towards. And if they can get something close to 70 million euros, then yes, this will happen.
How will he cope, though, with the step up to the Premier League, Sid?
I mean, it's going to be very difficult for him because in Spain you can cruise through three quarters of the game. I mean, look, in all seriousness, I suppose one thing that possibly is true with Koundé is he's not particularly tall as centre-backs go. The English league does tend to be slightly more frontal. That's not to say it has more crosses, because actually you look at the statistics and there's not a significant difference really between the two leagues. But it may well be that he's confronted with a slightly different type of defending. He's also, and for those in particular, you think back last year to the game against Barcelona in the Copa del Rey, I think it's the first Sevilla goal in the first leg. Koundé comes running out the back, dribbles around about three players, ends up in the other area and finishes it off. And he has to be given a certain degree of freedom. So I suppose the question mark then becomes at Chelsea, where exactly does he fit in? What's the best role for him? And is it maybe as the right side of three central defenders to give him that freedom to play? Because one of the great things about Koundé, apart from all his other qualities, is that he's a really nice footballer. He's not just a defender. He's not just someone who will kind of do the... I don't want to call them the basics because that's not the right phrase, but, you know, just do the defensive work. He'll want to do a lot more. And I think if they can find a role in which he's free to do that, I think that Chelsea will have bought themselves a really, really nice footballer.
All the right moves, it seems, from Chelsea. Looking to build on the success, of course.
Talking about coming out from the back, I mean, they switched things at Chelsea towards the end of the season. Azpilicueta went from that position to right wing back, and Reece James came back in there as somebody who was big, strong and powerful and could come out with the ball at the back. If Koundé goes in there, you know, you could put Reece James back to wing back. And then you got a real threat down that right hand side with a really experienced defender in Azpilicueta. That he can use whenever he wants, or I mean, he can play him or whatever, but that just gives him an extra strength to the bow down that side. It's a lot of money, but Chelsea have shown recently the desire again, it seems, from the ownership to go and spend money, particularly under this new manager.
He doesn't look like a centre-back, this guy. Right. When you see him with the ball at his feet coming out, he looks like a midfield player.
Is that a concern?
I think it might be. You know, it seems to me that the way Tuchel set up his Chelsea side, it's rock solid, it's disciplined, this is your job. Listen, if there's an opportunity that arises maybe in the game, then take it. But I don't think Tuchel wants somebody trying to walk out the back and dribble past people, which the guy can do.
Meanwhile, let's remind you that Lionel Messi is a free agent as it stands. After his Miami adventures, he's back home in Barcelona. You
can hold on. What? Still a free agent?
Still a free agent, yeah.
Thought it was all done and dusted.
Nope.
They couldn't sign him.
They haven't signed him yet.
Oh, what could possibly go wrong?
Yes, exactly. Obviously, all the reports that it is imminent, but all of it said is trying to balance the book with Antoine Griezmann still very much at the centre of things. Barcelona ideally want to get rid of the huge wages that they are paying the Frenchman. He's talking now about maybe there could be a pay cut in the offing. But even with that, they're still in big trouble, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I don't know if you noticed this evening that Barcelona put out a tweet saying that they've got, and I don't know enough about finances to be able to properly explain this, but to say they've got a BBB credit rating, which basically means that they're not a club that are necessarily in trouble in terms of creditors saying, we will not lend you money. Now, obviously, that's very good news and it's very important, the situation that Barcelona are in. But it's quite bizarre that this is the kind of thing that's being announced. And that tells you something about the gravity of the situation. In terms of Griezmann, his salary is problematic for Barcelona. There's no doubt about that. But he's not the best paid player at the club. I think he's fourth best played in the first team squad. I think the bigger issue with him is that according to the accountancy of Barcelona, of course, we know the way that clubs work, a huge chunk of his amortization still needs to be paid. I think around about 70 million euros that needs to go onto the books. And so Barcelona trying to release that is as much about that as it is about the salary. And so you can have Griezmann take a pay cut, and if he stays, you need him to, but they still need to generate that money from somewhere. They still need to generate over 100 million euros from somewhere. So essentially, Barcelona are in a position now where everyone is for sale. And if Griezmann doesn't get sold, it's because they can't do it. If Griezmann doesn't move on, it's because they can't do it, and they will have to try and move someone else on. And of course, we've already seen them move players on this summer, but it's not enough, not yet. And they're in big trouble. And look, to go back to Messi, to put this in the context of Messi, yeah, that is exactly the situation. An agreement has been reached with him. But for them to be able to finalise it, a whole lot of other people have got to leave first.
But they got a good credit score. That's good.
No, you, amortisation. That's your.
Okay. Well, just unfortunately, we've run out of time.
For a lot more of what's been going on at Real Madrid, be sure to check out Sid's article over on the website.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Been some significant moves down there from Manchester United this summer. Rafa Varane, of course, confirmed this week. Jadon Sancho making that big money transfer from Borussia Dortmund. Plus, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer signing a 3-year contract with an option for another year. Jan, I'm glad you're with us because so many people on social media accuse us of being anti-Manchester United because we haven't been popping the champagne after the announcement of Solskjaer signing that new contract. Pretty much unanimous from everyone we've had on, questioning why on earth United chose now to do it. Are you in that camp as well?
No, not at all. I think that is a consequence of what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did last season. He steadied the ship. He got them back in a second position. And they have started a transfer window now with some good signings. Maybe not enough to be a title challenger yet, but I think that is a consequence of that season. What surprised me, Dan, of his extending the contract that they did so long till 2024, when you know that Pochettino, Tuchel, Guardiola, so all the contracts are up in 2023. But I guess they can afford to fire a manager if he doesn't win titles, because this, of course, puts pressure on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He has to produce titles and trophies for Manchester United.
Do you want to say anything? Shall I continue? You were leaning, and I wasn't sure if there was anything coming out of your mouth.
How long has he got, by the way, to keep getting better?
I was just trying to think about the other day. What day is it today?
Today is Wednesday, I
reckon. I was trying to think about the other day I was on, because I was just going to say, click on the link on ESPN Plus for that show.
Right, OK. That's it.
Is this his third year in charge?
Yes.
Don't know.
Yes, it is, yeah.
I'm quite bored of it all.
So Jan's saying that maybe not enough to challenge for a title.
Yeah.
So
this will be his fourth campaign in charge. His third full campaign.
So how long has this guy got before he starts challenging?
Yeah, so I suppose that's the question, Jan, isn't
it? That's what I said. I think we said that when Frank Lampard, you remember when he got that transfer windows where he couldn't buy players? There was no pressure on Frank Lampard. Mm. And I think that before this season, when you got Varane, you got a central defender, you can mix your midfield a bit differently now. You don't have to have two number six to kind of hide the defence problem they got. They got exciting players in Jadon Sancho. Of course, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer now have to produce a title. That is the pressure of being a Manchester United manager. For all the guys who are sitting in the studio and say he shouldn't get a new contract, I think that is wrong. I think that is exactly what he should get after a second place. If I could finish my sentence, and then I was just saying that the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer made him a second last season, and if you see the record the last years, Manchester United haven't been good at all. So I think I couldn't be a surprise for extend his contract.
Well, they did finish second on 81 points with Jose Mourinho winning the League Cup and the Europa League. So. I mean,
exactly. And if you saw Manchester United last season, Mourinho was there, Craig Burley, even you would have fired Jose Mourinho.
I'm not arguing with that, but I've not seen a manager lauded so much who has won so little over a new contract. We know Solskjaer was not going to be fired in the summer or after last season. We know that wasn't going to happen. All my point was, which I think was pretty much in line with what Stevie and others were saying, is there was no rush to give him one because there's no other suitors out there. When you give somebody a new contract, it's because there are other suitors out there and you're worried about losing them. Here they have a manager. Here they have a manager where they could have sat and assessed how the season was going up until around Christmas time and made a decision, one way or the other, you know, good or bad. And all I'm saying I don't understand what the rush was to have to hand this out when they were not in danger of losing Solskjaer and then have not tied themselves down to a long-term deal?
I think that is a fair point, Craig, but I think that the reason they did that was they're spending a lot of money now. I mean, they say Varane is a great deal, Sancho is a great deal, but still, they have spent a lot of money in this summer, and they've spent a lot of money the last year, although a lot of the Manchester United fans so mad at the Glazers for different reasons, but they have spent money. And I think that was a bit predictability when they are going into this season, that they make sure that he will stay. Everybody wouldn't think of that something will happen with the managers. I think that was a strategic position for Manchester United, but we all know the business. If he doesn't produce, if he doesn't get the results, then he will be gone anyway. But I think that was not a surprise that they kind of extend his contract now when they're doing all these kind of investments.
Surely that's the reason you don't extend it, because you've gone out and spent a lot of money. What happens if it falls flat on its face? Now you're going to have to pay a guy a three-year contract up if you want rid of him. It's kind of what happened to Frank. We all gave Frank a pass when he had no transfer window. Then he goes and spends a load of money. Then they go on a terrible run. Abramovich says, thanks very much. I gave you the money, you brought in the players, and you didn't produce. Nobody can have a problem, really. So surely that's the reason you don't give him a contract. Because you brought in players, you spent a lot of money on players, for them to compete for the Premier League title, and if it falls flat, then you're stuck with them, or you pay them a three-year deal.
Were Manchester United not paying David Moyes whilst Louis van Gaal was manager, and paying Louis van Gaal whilst Jose Mourinho was manager, and probably paying Jose Mourinho while Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was manager, if indeed they hadn't paid him up in one big, huge lump sum? And so, I just feel there was lessons to be learned here about how they conducted their business. But they've made a decision, and they'll have to see how that stacks up with the other clubs that are vying for domestic and European trophies. I mean, great signing so far, great transfer window, there's no doubt about that. But there's still a few anomalies within the side to see, you know, just how strong they're going to be in comparison to Chelsea City and, probably Liverpool as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think that Manchester United will do their business kind of differently in terms of money. And Stevie got a good point, and we saw that with Frank Lampard. But I am afraid in this mad world of football money that is going around now to sack a manager or pay him for 2-3 years, that is not a big thing. But I still don't think it's surprisingly that they want the predictability on the most important job at the club at the moment, when they are selling an idea, they are selling a project to Varane or Sancho. They want to know who will be the manager. And even though we've criticised Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as he doesn't have the pulling power, well, so far, so good in terms of the transfer window. And then we all know that is the great thing about football. When you lose the first game, then the going, we know where things are going anyway.
Yeah, and it was about the money, wasn't it? It wasn't about Solskjaer. No one else has got this sort of money
at the moment. Of course. But it's a fair point, because we have to, even pundits or even experts have to remember what we said at least a couple of weeks ago. So if we say that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can't be the Manchester United manager because he can't pull players, okay, fair enough. But then we have to give him the thumbs up when things are going good. And there is a lot of other clubs that would need a Varane or a Sanchez too, Dan. So it's not only they went to Manchester United only for the money.
What's the success then, Jan? You talk about silverware. What sort of silverware are we talking about? Because you take a look at the squads that City and Chelsea have, despite these additions that Manchester United have made, it's still not good enough, is it? The players, there aren't a good enough a selection of players within that squad for Manchester United, you feel, to compete on the same level as Manchester City, for example.
Absolutely, Jan. But if we have a look at the last seasons of Manchester United and if we see the odds here, I think the odds are fair. I expect Manchester City to be there, Chelsea be the Champions League. Maybe they can add someone, at least one or two players more, and Liverpool have to come back. They maybe done the best signing this summer if they get Van Dijk fit for the season. So for Manchester United, they have to get closer, because we can say, yeah, they have to win, but we always compare them with Sir Alex Ferguson when he was there. Van Gaal, Mourinho, David Moyes, they didn't produce either for Manchester United. So Manchester United got to get closer. They were second last season and they have to get closer to win titles.
However, if you're Solskjaer, you'll say, hey, look, I've got a team that are fourth favourites to win the Premier League here. If I can match that or beat that, then surely I've exceeded expectations and I've achieved my job.
That depends. That depends where your sights are set.
Right.
I would have thought. Although you can't argue with Jan that right now they're probably fourth best.
Mm-hmm.
It's Manchester United. Are we going to have to clean the slate and forget about Fergie? And Manchester United are now at a level where, oh, if they can break through the fourth spot into the top three consistently, then that's success.
Right.
Because that's kind of the way the talk's going, that because Ollie's got a new contract...
Solskjaer, yes, don't call him Ollie.
Sorry, Solskjaer.
Fine.
And they're not going to challenge for the title, but that's OK.
Right, but this is it.
How is that okay?
If Solskjaer's in charge of a Manchester United team that are favourites to win the title and they don't win it, you can understand why he's got to go.
Tell me something. Who have Chelsea signed so far?
Chelsea have done nothing, haven't they? They've been quiet so far.
Right, OK. Chelsea haven't signed anybody of note so far, but Chelsea are seen by the bookies as more likely to challenge for a title. Why? Where were Chelsea when Thomas Tuchel came in?
Well, you can ask me, Craig, because I said to you that it was the best signing of the season. So just ask me, Craig.
No, you're doing a good job patting yourself in the back.
But yeah,
is it that simple? If Thomas Tuchel was in charge of this Manchester United team, would they be second favourites instead of fourth, Jan?
Well, I think one of the reasons Tuchel had a period, not just at the end of the season, but he had a bad period and people were having a go at him, but he won the Champions League. So I think when you put up the odds, I mean, maybe this is breaking news, but it's not professors doing the odds in England. And winning the Champions League, you have to put them further up at the odds table, so to say. But Thomas Tuchel is one of the best managers in the world. And I've said it all along. So that is nothing to do with that. That doesn't surprise me that Manchester United are fourth. And would you have changed anything, Stevie and Craig?
All I'm saying is Thomas Tuchel comes in and because people have looked at the structure of his organisations and what he wants and the player understanding of what he wants, whether we think it's the greatest thing or not, it could have, should have been an FA Cup final win, but Leicester were the better team and it was a Champions League final win.
Mm.
And I think because of that, there is a confidence that within that Chelsea squad, that even if they don't bring any other big names in, that he has got the guile to go and the nous to get enough out of that group of players that they potentially could challenge.
You know, we're forgetting one thing, right? So we're all supposed opponents, we're supposed to be experts, and we're talking about this and that. At the end of the day, you can't argue that Chelsea have got a better squad than Man United, right? But we're forgetting, listen, I'm a fan, and I'm a Liverpool fan.
Right.
And when Brendan Rodgers was the manager of Liverpool, I got sick listening to him talking about how great they were and how they were going to do this and how they were building this and building that and getting nowhere. I got sick of listening to it. I hated it at the end, and I was glad that they moved them on. Solskjaer's doing exactly what Brendan Rodgers was doing at Liverpool. They're getting better. We're getting better.
Right.
I'm sick of listening to him telling them we're getting better. They're going to have to break
through. But they are getting better. They finished second last year.
And again, we're going back to where we started. When are they going to get over the top of getting better? And why are you giving the guy a three-year contract?
Right.
It doesn't add up to me. It doesn't add up.
Just a reminder, the boys will be back on Extra Time. You can always check that out over on our YouTube channel. Of course, staying late to talk about Stevie's hair, pretty much.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
So the second season of Bundesliga on ESPN starts off with the defending champions away against Borussia Mönchengladbach. That's on Friday the 13th. And then on the Saturday, it's Borussia Dortmund against Eintracht Frankfurt. That's the 12:30 game on ESPN+. As it stands, of course, Erling Haaland remains a Borussia Dortmund player. Speaking to the press this week, asked about the fact he could go into Chelsea for 175 million, saying, I hope they are just rumours because 175 million, would be a lot of money for one person. Jan, what's the latest?
Well, the latest is, as you said in your quote, Erling Haaland did a great great interviews yesterday. He said, I am a Dortmund player, I will stay. Now I would stay as long as I am Dortmund player. And then he had this quote. And everything was okay. And then Matthias Sammer, you remember back in the days, he was a great football player. Now he's an advisor to the Dortmund boss, Watzke. So everything calmed down. But he made an interview and said, yeah, I think he will stay. But if we get a madman will give us an unbelievable, crazy offer, then he will probably go. And exactly what I said at the Champions League, because then I was there, I was in Porto, I heard what Chelsea was saying about Erling Haaland. He is their main target, but it needs to be a big, big, big offer to get him away. Remember, this season or this summer, Dortmund decide where he's going to play. Next summer, he got a clause, and then he will decide together with his team where he is going. So, but as it is today, he is at Dortmund and he's happy with that. But some advisors to the CEO wants to make themselves a name, and then they go all in, and Erling Haaland will keep on scoring with Dortmund till he scores somewhere else.
I just go and do it.
That's exactly the point I'm going to say. Chelsea have got a lot of money. At the moment, there aren't many other clubs that have got the sort of clout that can come in and go, right, here's lots of money, we'll get you. Next summer is going to be a bidding war. Chelsea, just
injuries,
do it.
Football, occupational hazard, bad injuries, you just never know. This is the one guy, and I mean this, the one guy in world football at the moment that I would break the bank for.
Yep.
Because you're buying longevity. You're buying a player who, this is scary to say, can still get better. Just look at that. Stevie and I were shaking the head at that goal.
Isn't that goal?
Power, pace, you know, poised at the end, finishing, everything we've seen from this young man. This is a bank breaker. This is a for the clubs that are able to potentially do it. You go to your investors and you say, we've got to get this.
Yeah.
These are Messi and Ronaldo numbers.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Listen, if he can do it, then yes, you just go and do it.
Yeah. Go and slap the biggest offer you can down on Dortmund's table. 150.
And is it?
Yeah. Go on, Jan.
No, I'm just saying, it's quite interesting as well, because what I tried to describe in my first comment there was that Team Haaland has been very, very polite. They have said nothing. There will not be a strike, although he will earn double, triple his money if he goes somewhere else. But they've said nothing. So that's why it was so interesting that Dortmund last night went out and said, well, if we get a mad offer, we'll let him go, and so on. And we know, but we don't know 100% of the financial situation of the clubs. But we learned this week that Bayern Munich have lost 150 million euros. So we'll see how this develops. As you said in the beginning, Dan, the league start is just around the corner. They're playing Eintracht Frankfurt the 14th of August. So I expect this has to be decided in the next 7 to 10 days, and they'll see what's happening. It's most likely that he will stay at Dortmund, but as Matthias Sammer said, there is only one madman who can make a mad offer, and I so agree with the boys. This, not only will they get a player that would score 30 goals for you, but he will do that for 10 years. In the next 10 seasons.
Just to confirm, none of us are calling Roman Abramovich mad. Jan.
That was Matthias Sammer.
Jan, just from Erling Haaland's point of view, say a silly offer comes in from Chelsea for 175. It's then down to him whether or not he wants to move, isn't it? Because obviously he's still under contract at Dortmund. Would he want to go, or would he want to hold fire until next summer, where a Real Madrid or Manchester City or Barcelona or whoever it may be might come in?
Well, we haven't got to that position, that where what would they say? But of course, if someone are willing to pay so much money, this is a contract for life. And we said it could be injury, lack of form, whatever could happen next summer. What's the world next summer? Yeah. With Bayern Munich, they're saying they're going to keep Lewandowski. Real Madrid nearly bankrupt. Barcelona nearly bankrupt. They'll find a way to find money. But still, we don't know about 1 year down the road. So then they will sit down, as they've done all the time, and they will have a look, where can he develop there? And if I were them, I would look at that Chelsea side, and I would say that is the perfect fit with the players they have up front there. He will be perfect for Chelsea Football Club. And Thomas Tuchel knows that, of course. And then the rest is all about the bank and Abramovich and whatever you need to get this player to London.
Then Dortmund can get Timo Werner in return. Everyone's a winner. Just a reminder, you can go over to our ESPN FC videos and subscribe there on our page over on YouTube. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. So La Liga starts August 13th on ESPN, and it starts with Valencia in action against Getafe. They kick things off that game live on ESPN Plus at 3 p.m. Eastern. Welcome Sid Lowe back to the show. Sid, we are, of course, focusing on a team a day ahead of the start of La Liga. Today, all about Valencia, a club which is fair to say is in a complete mess.
Well, it's a club that's got difficulties at the moment, yeah. Of course, there's a social fracture between the fans and some of the ownership group. There's a sense that obviously some of their best players, because of the financial situation, have had to be moved on. There was the breakdown after the departure of Marcelino. I think there's a hope now that the force of personality of Pepe Bordalas, who's just joined as manager, may try and bring the club together. The curious thing, of course, is that Bordalas, when he was manager of Getafe, was the key reason why a new rivalry was building between Getafe and Valencia, because those games have been so edgy and so nasty, and now he's crossed to the other side.
What the expectation? It's got to be at least top 10, hasn't it, Sid?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because actually, to be honest, we sort of don't know. So for a lot of last season, obviously, Valencia were in enough trouble that at times there were questions about whether could this team actually go down. Then we started analysing the quality of the squad and wondering if in truth this was a squad that was bad enough to go down, you know, not falling into that trap of saying, oh, this team's too good to get relegated. And you started wondering if, oof, maybe they are bad enough to go down. But actually, I think the squad was strong enough that it should have been and round about halfway anyway, maybe even slightly higher. So I think this season, even if there aren't huge additions, and it doesn't look like there's going to be very many of those, I think you're right. I think with a sense of purpose, with a clarity of idea, if they get it right, then yes, this is a team that should expect to be in the top half of the table.
And who would have thought we'd been saying that, say, 15, 20 yep. years ago, Sid, Valencia, one of the big boys in Spain.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing. And look, this will sound very, very stupid now over the last 7 or 8 years. But genuinely, before Diego Simeone went to Atletico Madrid, Atletico Madrid were not bigger than Valencia in terms of the position they were in terms of the place they were at that point. And I think Valencia fans are entitled to look at Atletico Madrid now and know that, of course, there are some disadvantages they have compared to Atletico. But think, you know, it wasn't impossible that we might have found ourselves in this position. Bear in mind that this is the club that took the league title from Real Madrid's Galacticos twice in 3 seasons under Rafa Benitez. It's the club that won the UEFA Cup. It's the club that did very well in the Champions League. It's the club that was a fixture in the Champions League. And so, yeah, this is absolutely a club with a city, a fan base, a history, at times at least, less so now, a collection of players that really should be competing to win things in Spain. Obviously, it's probably worth pointing this out. It's a club that only 2 years ago was Copa del Rey champions as well, of course, and had got back into the Champions League. And that should have been the starting point for development from there. But that's the point at which things started to really kind of break down.
Away from the football, Sid, what a city.
Yeah, it's a brilliant city. Valencia really is a brilliant city. It's a city that's abundant in natural resources. Of course, it's the place where Paella comes from. It has huge rice fields and to the edge of the city. It has fantastic coastline. The Art and Science Park is cutting edge in terms of the development there, in terms of the architecture and so on. The project that they did to basically use the riverbed is wonderful. The old city streets around the cathedral are fantastic. It's a great city, and it's a city with a real identity, a real confidence about itself, fantastic climate. It's a brilliant place to be. But then obviously, you know, as through the course of these 20 club kind of portraits, we're going to be talking about lots of cities that are brilliant, because Spain's a bit like that.
Indeed it is. Sid Lowe, thank you very much. Be sure to join us tomorrow. We'll be focusing on Espanyol, of course, based in Barcelona. Be sure to join us then as we continue to the start of La Liga on ESPN.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Yam back with the boys to answer your questions. Welcome in then to Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Craig and Stevie with us here in the studio. Jan Arge Fjørtoft and his beautiful hair joins us as well. And inevitably, there's
a lot of questions
for Stevie.
You had a lot of questions.
I know, we've whittled down the questions.
Somebody hasn't got a life. Somebody sat in the control room and printed
Producer
out.
Producer Pete chose the questions today. He doesn't want to go.
Instead of just putting four questions, a bit like 24 questions, went, oh, this will be fun, more questions. No.
Right. Stevie, what would the reaction have been like in the Liverpool dressing room if you showed up to pre-season with that haircut?
Oh, dear, dear. Absolutely annihilated.
Yeah.
I got pretty much annihilated by most people that I know around here.
Yeah, and tennis ball head seems to be the...
Even the grandkids were laughing.
Jan, do you have return? Have you seen it?
I've seen it for the first time. I followed it in the social world.
Yes.
I've seen all these the reactions and everything. But now I see it live. Stevie, you look beautiful. I love you.
Well, Jan, I can recommend if you're getting a haircut, two in the side, three on the top. Okay?
Didn't you turn up once with Eleanor's trousers on to Liverpool's, to a training game or to a match?
Good memory, Dan.
I remember that story you told me. What was the reaction?
I packed the wrong pants. I packed my wife's pants. They were black.
Right.
So I thought I was putting them... I got in the wash.
Yes.
Got into the cupboard.
Yep.
Pulled a pair of pants.
Right.
And then the morning of the game, I was getting dressed and I was like, ah, hold on a minute. The zip's in the wrong place.
But you just wore them anyway.
I just never said anything.
And then somebody clocked it?
No, I had a few beers on the bus on the way back.
Oh, you told them.
I spilled the beans on the
and the chips as well. You ever worn Charles trousers by accident?
Right. You ever worn Elmer's?
What is a bigger rivalry, Stevie? Celtic versus Rangers or Liverpool versus Manchester United?
Oof. I'd probably say Celtic and Rangers just edges it.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, you talk about hatred.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah, I'd probably say... Rangers Celtic just shade it.
Craig nodded for those listening on the podcast.
He actually nodded as if, without actually saying it, he nodded and looked at me as if to say, of course it is. Don't be stupid. I'm just
What's happening to the clock? What's happening? Are you in a rush?
Well, I want to go.
Oh, well, there we go. Good. Jan, you agree, Celtic Rangers?
Yeah, I think. I mean, Stevie played for Liverpool, and of course, he's influenced by that. But seeing it from a historic perspective, all with the religions and all the political statements done, I will also say the Glasgow Derby. Yes.
Jan, with the new Premier League season starting soon, what do you think is the hardest thing to repeat by English teams? United's treble, Arsenal's invincibles, or City's 100 points?
I would say Arsenal's invincibles, because it's so hard to go through the whole season. It's hard to make the treble, it's hard to make 100 points, but still it's manageable. But what Arsenal did that year was unbelievable. So I will say go through a whole season. You have to be with VAR and yellow cards and injuries and all that kind of thing. I think don't underestimate VAR. I mean, I'm so happy that I didn't have VAR in my time. I would guess I would have lost some goals and we would love some wins, wouldn't we?
Craig, do you agree?
Sorry, what was it?
Arsenal's invincibles, United's treble, or City's 100 points. What's the most difficult to emulate against the start of the new season?
Mine's treble, Arsenal's.
See, if you'd been listening, you could answer and we could have moved on to the next question.
Treble.
If you're in a hurry.
Treble?
Yeah.
Stevie?
I think I'm going to go with Jan.
Yeah, the Invincibles.
What did Jan say?
But you're not listening at all.
Jan said the Invincibles.
Did Stevie need glasses or contact lenses when he was playing? He's blind as a bat.
No.
So your eyesight was fine?
Yeah.
And then it just went, because it's terrible.
No, it went gradually. But I never went until I'd stopped playing.
Right. What age were you then when you had glasses?
I'm going to say... Well, I needed them for reading to begin with.
Okay.
So I didn't need them to actually play.
Right. Yeah.
It was just for reading. So I'm going to say 36 maybe, 37, something like that.
Can you see the clock from there with your glasses? Craig keeps
I can see them
with
my glasses. If I took them off, I'd be struggling.
Stevie, as a defender, how would you feel if Jordan Pickford was your keeper, just constantly screaming at you?
No thanks, not for me.
He has this thing, isn't he? He makes a great save and then shouts a lot.
Yeah, shut up.
Yeah, I mean...
Is that me or Pickford?
Yeah, I mean, he's too hyper.
Right.
Sorry, I was waving at somebody outside.
It's not a taxi, was it? Wait for you.
Yes, it was outside.
Yeah, if somebody said to you, what's your definition or what would your ideal goalie be? It would be somebody who was cool,
right,
calm and collected.
Yeah. Did you have any of those? Mm. David James,
Ray Clemens was about as cool and calm as you could get.
Right.
Brucey just had spats of doing something.
Okay.
But generally he was all right.
Right.
But Pickford's, I'm sorry, it's it looks like he needs something to calm him down every 2 seconds.
Why is everyone, Jan, doubting if Varane can do it in the Premier League? Why is there always so much talk about whenever a player from another league goes to the Premier League? And why is it never mentioned when it's the other way round?
Who are these, everybody? Yeah,
well, yes, I suppose there's been selected, hasn't there? I think Rio Ferdinand and Danny Mills, haven't they, if former England international has been questioning things.
Yeah, but Varane said Rio Ferdinand is my favourite player. That's why I went to Manchester United. I guess that will be sorted. But I think that is I think that is ridiculous. He's a four-time Champions League winner. He's a World Champ, World Cup winner. Will he be a success at Manchester United? I don't know. But he has all the abilities to be a success in the Premier League. And that is just like... But I won't say everybody, because these are two or three people who wants to make a name of themselves in different social platforms.
Have you been watching the Olympics, Jan? What's your favourite thing to watch?
Well, so far, Norway have got one goal. That was a triathlon. We were very proud in the middle of the night, swimming, biking and running. But my highlight will be 400-metre hurdles, where our favourite... Karsten Warholm will be the big favourite. Got a world record 2 weeks ago and a good friend of mine, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. Mingling with all the stars.
Yeah.
Did you know the person who won the triathlon as well?
No, I didn't know him. I just saw that his big dream was to be a goalkeeper for Rosenborg Trondheim. So I guess football got a bit sharing of his goal there.
Hey.
Hey.
Jan doesn't know him.
Right.
But he knows Jan.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows Jan.
Right.
Do you watch the Olympics, Craig?
Exactly.
No. I haven't seen a second of it.
No, you haven't seen any of it?
Oh, no.
Stevie.
Pile of garbage.
Do you... What's pile of... The Olympics isn't a pile of garbage.
Well, it is now.
It's not.
No fans, no supporters there.
There were no fans in living football last year.
Yeah, that was a pile of garbage.
Right, good.
Hurry up.
Stevie, do you root for Great Britain in the Olympics, or is it Scotland or nothing?
No, Great Britain.
Right, so you don't mind if an English person wins. That's weird, though.
Aye, it is weird.
Yeah.
I'm a bit weird.
Good.
Oh, we made it to the final question, Craig, and it's for you.
Good. I'm not answering it.
Am I allowed to call you Craig, or is it too matey? Would you prefer Mr. Burley or Craig Burley or Craig William Burley?
Or Mr. Grumpy.
Or Mr. Can't Be Bothered. Mr. In a Rush. Mr. Why Are We Doing This? Mr. I got to get home to watch the Gold Cup.
William is not doing his job. He's just addressing me.
Right, I see.
Right.
Okay.
Not matey.
Right.
Don't care.
No. It was funny watching when I was with you in Madrid, Stevie, in Liverpool, obviously in the final. Everyone was coming up to you as if they were your best mate.
All right, mate. How you doing?
What are you going to do?
No,
shut up! Don't call me, mate.
No, but what's interesting? I was like, did you know? Do you know these? And you're like, no. It was incredible. Everybody just loves you, Stevie.
Oh, except the barber. Clearly.
You did that one yourself.
The one that really would have mattered most.
Oh, dude, you think it was a secret Man United fan?
Had to be.
The barber did his job as you asked him.
Yeah, you asked for 3 and 2.
3 and 2.
I can't argue with that.
No. It's 100% your fault.
100%. I take responsibility.
That's it. We're done, Craig. That's good. Are you back tomorrow?
Useless.
Oh, great. Are you here tomorrow, Stevie?
What day is it?
Tomorrow's Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. More. Jan, are you with us tomorrow?
Well, I need some good hair in the studio, so I probably will.